The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but Christians have such a lousy reputation in the world today. Indeed, we do, no argument there. And I began discussing the reputation of Christians last week. Today, I want to continue the discussion, but not by myself. I'm joined by my good friend, Jim Barrier, calling from San Antonio, Texas, where he pastors a church. Jim also co-hosted the program Resistance Radio for several years on KSLR. That's also in San Antonio. He hosted this along with Gary Young, a very successful show that has sadly been discontinued, not because it wasn't popular. They had a wide following, but other time commitments forced Gary and Jim to pull the show off the air. I'm glad that today we can resurrect a little of that show's flavor. Jim, welcome to our program.
Hey, I feel alive already, man.
Lazarus, come forth.
Yes, sir. How are you, Bob?
It's good to talk to you, my friend. I wish you lived in San Diego. You once lived in San Diego, actually.
I am a third-generation San Diegan, which is an endangered species, for those of you keeping score at home.
Now, did you move out to Texas because you figured ahead of time, unlike the rest of us lunkheads, that they're probably going to be the first to secede from the Union when we become a communist Marxist state?
Yes, well, Texas does have it in their state constitution that they can secede from the Union, and there is a grassroots movement headed that direction.
Well, they're kind of used to that because they were their own separate republic, and then they seceded with the South during the Civil War. That one wasn't for a good cause, right. But they kept them in the habit of secession. Might be for a good cause this next time, though.
Well, I tell you, you might want to come out and join us.
well, just being able to be around you and Gary would make it. Now, I should have thought to have Gary on the show, too, but I know he was the one who primarily was getting too busy for radio. So,
well, he is. He's very busy, and in fact, just to take care of this right away, I'm going with Gary this week down to Florida. He is running next Saturday in a full Ironman triathlon.
Boy, he's still doing those triathlons. He is.
Oh my gosh! He'll swim 2.5 miles. He'll bike 112 miles, and then run a full marathon all in one day.
All in one day.
And I will take pictures of it all. That's what I'm
Well, that takes some exercise, Jim, to use your fingers to snap that camera.
Yeah. Well, digital now, So, we did really enjoy doing the show. And we hope that at some point, mostly his schedule, he's taken on a number of other commitments. And so when the time opens up, we would love to do another show.
Weren't you talking about some kind of cable? I'm not cable, but internet
online
program?
We've talked about doing, a kind of a thing we could post online. And we've got a guy that has the technology and the expertise in that field. And so that may happen, too. That would be way out there because you wouldn't have, at this point, the government hasn't tried any fairness doctrine about the internet that they can enforce.
Well, you know what? They had a meeting just 2 weeks ago. Obama has a new internet czar, and they are actually talking about needing to bring more diversity to the internet, which is just about the nuttiest thing I can think of. Jim, can you imagine anything more diverse right now than the internet?
There's so much weird stuff on there already. Now, let's talk about that word czar. Let's just jump into it, Bob.
Okay.
I keep all these czars. So I looked up the word czar, and it says a czar is an autocratic ruler, which is a redundancy. So I looked up the word autocrat, and it says a ruler with absolute, unlimited authority.
Yeah, and in all fairness,
we really need czars in our life?
Well, you know, and in all fairness, there were other presidents that appointed czars, but I think Obama's the only one who's really paying attention to the definition and going to town with them.
Well, exactly, and I understand that it's been used, you know, by other administrations, but this is crazy. It's like anything he's got a little particular fetish about, he wants to put a czar in there.
Well, you know, Obama has this uncanny ability to do whatever he wants to do, whatever we're afraid he's going to do. Then he comes on television the next day and explains to everyone that he didn't really do it. For example, he has said, I don't believe in the fairness doctrine. But he's appointed a czar over the FCC called the Diversity Czar.
Right.
And now they have an internet czar. I mean, the internet, Jim. I mean, there's golf. There's fishing. There's websites that go from being as liberal to moveon.org to as conservative as townhall.com. Yeah. Every kind of religion you want. There's green Chinese pottery. There's 15th century Russian embroidery. And they're claiming we don't have enough diversity. I think that's just code for not offending certain people groups, which is code for being politically correct, which is even more code for doing it the way Obama wants it done.
The word is censorship, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is, but they won't do that. Obama will, after they make these new laws, Obama will go on TV the next day and he'll say, "No, I just want y'all to know that this is not censorship. I'm a big believer in free speech, but we have to have sensitive speech. We have to have responsible speech." So, yeah, I tell you, these are becoming golden vintage days doing radio because I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to
do
this
thing. And by the way, I'd like the term free speech to include not using a teleprompter.
Listen.
Just wanted to throw that in there.
If he'd like to at least start telling the truth, I don't care. He can have his teleprompter. I just don't want him to lie.
You know, it's crazy. But the truth is, right now, the internet, the World Wide Web, is really the last frontier for freedom fighters.
It is. It's the last bastion of free
speech. There's a lot of garbage
out
there, but it's also a place people can say something, and right now, no one can control them or censor them or veto them, and for that reason, I like it.
And we can check facts. When when Obama gave that speech a few weeks ago to Congress about health care, he mentioned three lies that the Republicans and conservatives were guilty of. One was that the health care was going to cover abortion. The other was that the health care was going to cover illegal aliens. And the other was that the health care was going to have death panels. Well, actually, it was going to have all three of those things.
Yeah.
And when Obama said that the people who claimed those things were going to be included were lying, he was lying. And thank God for something like the internet where we can do a fact check the next day.
Yeah, well, exactly, I'm real, real confused about a great many things. I don't know how. I used to really think that we were smarter, but boy, it just seems like as a people, as a whole, I'm saying generically, America really has swallowed a lot of stuff, hook, line, and sinker. I don't know. I just don't know why people don't see what's going on.
You know, I think it's the political correctness and the guilt complex. America is one of the greatest, and yet I would agree with you, one of the most incredibly stupid countries that ever existed. We could possibly go down in civilization, down in history, as the first country to just flush itself down the toilet.
It's possible, and that's because we're the first society with indoor plumbing. But
true.
Einstein said, "The difference between genius and stupidity is genius has limitations."
Yeah, well, it's the difference between knowledge and wisdom. We certainly have a great accumulation. I mean, think about it. Look at the technology that we have today to have something like the internet and like cable and like wireless computers. And what's going to happen? We're going to have one or two people running it all, and our freedom is systematically being shut down side by side with the technology.
Yeah. And you know, a while back, I think just when things really just started getting ridiculously stupid, I said to a few folks, I woke up one morning and said, "What happened to my country?"
Yeah.
You know,
it's not the country of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison.
No,
anymore.
I haven't totally given up hope, Bob. I haven't completely given up hope.
I haven't either, but I think, would you agree, it would take a miracle and a humongous revival to turn us around at this point?
That's the only thing I think that can save us. And I've done a bit of, you know, research. I'm a bit of a student on not only history but revival history, because that's kind of my field. And England had some very dark times.
Can you think of a time comparable to this one where it seemed like things were were pretty desperate and it got turned around?
Well, when William Booth, for instance, came on the scene in Great Britain, and by the way, he was very much hated by the traditional church at the time, but they put up little stepping stools in the pubs so that children could go up there and get a drink.
What year are we talking about now?
No legal drinking age, and it was that kind of thing. And you think somebody's got to have more sense than that. England, you know, had the Church of England. There was a spiritual heritage there, but God will raise up people, and I don't know who that person is right now. And maybe it's not going to be a one-man show this time, but I think we are very ripe for something like the New England revivals with Charles Finney in this country,
or the
Welsh revivals with Evan Roberts, or things like that.
Or the Great Awakening right before the Revolutionary War.
Yeah. So there have always been those. In fact, I have read in secular history books that the Civil War in the United States can be tracked through the abolitionist movement,
which was a Christian movement by and large,
which has its roots in Charles Finney's New England revivals. By the way, Charles Finney, conservative Christian, if he would have been called that then, president of Oberlin College, which was the first university in this country to graduate blacks or women.
Yeah, and that's not the reputation that Christians have historically. We always hear about people
talk about that, aren't we?
Yeah, we always hear about people justifying slavery in the name of Christianity. And yes, there were churches in the South which did that by taking some Bible verses out of context.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Christians were responsible for the abolitionist movement primarily here in America and in England with Wilbur Wilberforce as well.
Oh yeah, and of course that film that was out a couple of years ago documented that very, very well about Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
And
even before the movie came out and made such a big splash?
Yeah.
So you were a little ahead of the curve with everybody.
Well, you know. And I think we were going to spend a little bit of time today just visiting that subject of what the world's view of the church is, or what the unbelievers think about the people who call themselves Christians. And that's something that is kind of a hobby horse for me.
Yeah, let's get into that. What would you say, if you had to capsulize it in a sentence or two, what would you say best describes, maybe not the truth about Christianity, but the understanding that people have of Christianity and the reputation Christians have in this country of ours?
Well, I think that the reputation and the perception, first of all, is probably somewhat well-deserved. I think that Christians, a great many of us, and I'll take some ownership of this, we have put an image out there that maybe isn't exactly what Jesus and his first century followers would have wanted to be known for.
I'm inclined to agree with you. What kinds of examples come to your mind?
Well, I'm going to give you a few, and I'm going to put a plug in here for a friend of ours who's been on our show. Gabe Lyons did a book with David Kinnaman of the Barna Project. And the title of the book is Unchristian.
Okay, hold that thought, Jim, and hang with us over the break. We'll hear some of your thoughts on the reputation that Christians have today, which you think is at least partly deserved. We'll be right back. Website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. More beautiful.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I mean this sincerely. It is a privilege to have my friend Jim Barrier from San Antonio on. I met Jim and Gary when they were having me on as a guest with their program, and all three of us admitted that within the 30 minutes of talking to each other and meeting each other over lunch, we felt like we'd known each other our whole lives. So it's a rare privilege with me just to spend this time with my good friend and to be able to share our bird brain thoughts with a radio audience is a bigger thrill. Welcome back to the program, Jim.
Hey, thanks. And, you know, I have felt that way. I think we made, not only do we feel like we've been friends for life, but we certainly are at this point. I think we have one of those commitments that will go on as long as we last, Bob.
Well, I'll tell you, if Texas secedes from the Union, I'm moving down there just to not lose contact with you, my friend.
Hey, come on down. And by the way, you know what we say down here when we have a holy war?
Oh, what's that?
Jihad.
Oh, my God. Instead of yeehaw, that's jihad. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I actually have some good friends that are moving to Texas, not San Antonio. I think they're moving around the Houston area, but I'll definitely put you in contact with them.
Well, Houston is like L.A. with bad weather. You don't really want to go down there.
Yeah, well, Texas is such a big state. I guess it just depends on what part you're in. Okay, you were about to tell us what you think the reputation of Christianity is today and that you think some of it is deserved by Christians.
Okay, and I'm going to run down a list here, and this is from Gabe Lyon's book, Unchristian. And the Barna people, you know, they do their research. They're kind of the Gallup poll of Christianity. They do these surveys and stats. And I'm going to run through here and just give you some numbers and some words. And
okay.
This is perceptions that unchurched people have of what we would call the church or Christians or Christianity. 91% of them feel that we are anti-gay or anti-homosexual.
And they would say that because of our stance on the practice, but they're convoluting it and saying that somehow means we hate the people.
That we're homophobes.
Yes.
And that we hate people or the hate crime thing. So they don't see the difference between disagreeing with a lifestyle and hating a person.
And yet they exhibit a great deal, many people exhibit a great deal of hatred toward Christianity. And they disagree with our sexual convictions.
That's
somehow,
different.
Somehow that's
different,
okay. Bob. That's different.
That's different.
And yet
that's
it
different.
Is true, though, getting back to your theme, that there certainly has been a time where the church has been guilty of treating homosexuals kind of in a class their own.
I have a problem with the representation that the number one thing people think of, that the agenda of the church is to pick out one particular sin.
Yes.
The scripture says, and you know this in James, it says if you're guilty of one point of the law, you're guilty of the whole law.
And on some of these lists where they mention homosexuality, they also mention various heterosexual sins. They mention lying, gossip, arrogance.
Yeah. Gluttony, ungratefulness, all kinds of things. As Gary has said on our show many times, if you could smell saturated fat on people's breath, there'd be less preaching about cigarettes. So, Now here's the deal, and I said this a week ago Sunday in the service, and then one of my elders told me he saw a TV show, I think it was Law and Order or something, that night, and I made the statement that, what if we were to say the Constitution guarantees a person the right to their sexual preference, and they happen to be a pedophile, and if their preference is they like small children, shouldn't the Constitution give them the right to exercise that lifestyle and live the way they want to? And everybody went, no. And, of course, trying to make a point, argument absurdum. And he said that night there was an episode on the TV show about that, a person actually pleading their case that way. And so there's a hypocrisy, a double standard, all of that. But I don't like the representation that the agenda of the church is to fight against homosexuality. That is not what the agenda is. It's a much broader, but it's we need to see people set free from whatever it is that enslaves them.
And we're all guilty of sin, and the message of the gospel is forgiveness and mercy, not condemnation.
So where is that? But that is not what we're known for. The next thing is, ironically, judgmental. 87% of people view Christians as being judgmental.
And I think a lot of Christians are. Sometimes on really minute things, they'll leave churches over worship
and as I have said thousands of times, legalism is always selective. We pick and choose what we judge people for.
Well, that's because we never see our own legalism, but we see everybody else's. We think our own legalism is real spiritual.
That's exactly right, and I'm guilty of that myself. And then the next thing right after that is 85% of them view Christians as hypocritical, and I think it's because of that, because we point fingers at other people for their particular sin, but then we don't own up to our own failures.
That's right. In fact, I heard a good definition of a hypocrite. I had once heard it defined as somebody who not only talks to other people about their sins, but has sins of their own. But that's not really what it is. It's usually the double standard, that they're mm-hmm. guilty of the very same sin, and they're saying, "And you, when you do it, it's a sin. When I do it, it's not a sin."
Yeah. And I think if you go in, and I love to do this, but if you do a word study and you look at the root words and the original concept and intention of the word had to do with the mask that actors used to use in the old days in theater, and they would hold a mask up to their face, and it would not only change the way they look, but the way they sound, and so it was pretending to be something that you're not.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So that's one. Then this one, and doggone it, I'm just going to have to go along with some of these, old-fashioned.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I think it's just in the last 10 years that churches have discovered drama. Unless it was a Christmas pageant. We used to hear, Belshazzar, there's the star, around Christmas. Yeah. And that was it. Other than that, theater was a sin to the church.
I've got a young friend. It's actually Gary's daughter, but she started going to a fellowship, and it's associated with a denomination, one which I was part of for 20 years, and they got permission from the district to do a non-traditional church. So they meet in a home. But they meet in a home, and they just do church in a house. They're not meeting in a church building, but they're doing the same stuff they
would
do.
I could just see them carrying the organ through the door right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen some goofy things, man. We do a lot of street ministry out here. As you know, we feed the homeless and do things. And I had a guy invite me to come preach for him one time. And I said, I really don't want to do that, but he said, oh, come on down. And so I went down. Of course, first thing was all the homeless people recognized me, and they said, what are you doing preaching? and doggone,
that was probably a compliment. If they didn't think you were a minister or didn't know you were a minister, it's probably the best compliment you could have gotten.
It's the greatest compliment I get is people say, you don't seem like a pastor.
Yeah, I'm like, thank you very much. Yeah, Who wants to seem like a pastor?
This guy's doing this meeting down, and he sets up chairs and stuff, and he took an offering.
Yeah.
He said, You're taking an offering from homeless people. What's up with that?
Oh, we got to have those tithes, though. What do you mean we can't take it? Okay, my friend, hang with us for another break. We'll be right back with my friend Jim Barrier. What kind of reputation do Christians have in the world today? This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. I'm joined today with my friend Jim Barrier, a pastor from San Antonio, Texas, former co-host of Resistance Radio, which has got to be one of the greatest titles for a radio show ever. And Jim, you're continuing on your list of the reputation, often deserved reputation,
yeah.
that Christians have today. If any of you would like to weigh in with your own view of Christians' reputation, maybe you're a Christian, maybe you're not, and you'd like to tell us why, give us a call, 888-344-1170, toll free. That's 888-344-1170. But for now, Jim, go ahead and continue down your list.
Okay. Now, the next one is going to be fun because of your show, but the world, the non-believers view Christians or the church as too political. Now, I know what they mean by that. They mean, one, it's anti-gay, and two, it's anti-abortion. That's pretty much what
they're kind of selective in the political views that they feel we're not allowed to be involved with.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they don't think it's too political if you're part of liberation theology and you're on the far left side of that pendulum within perceived Christianity, though I'm not sure how many evangelicals, if we want to use that term or start using labels, but the truth is, all through history, the church has been involved in politics, but it's always been for social reform and for moral values, those kind of things. Are you familiar with David Barton?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, he's been a guest on this radio program.
Awesome. Have you gone and done one of his tours in D.C.?
Oh, no. I've never. You know, the only time I was ever in Washington, D.C. was to change planes, unfortunately.
Listen, I'm going to call the station manager out there and tell him to give you some time. The next time David has one of his congressional meetings out there, I've gone out there for the congressional pastors conference, and we can get you in on that.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to.
And he'll do a tour with you, and it is absolutely amazing how much the Christian faith, not just religion, not just spirit, but the Christian faith, how absolutely interwoven it is with the foundation of this country. But yeah, you're going to have to talk to Dave and get out there on one of those things and do his personal tour, because it's awesome.
I would love to do that. Now, Jim, on this subject, what do you say to somebody who says, well, the Constitution says separation between church and state?
What I say is, I agree, keep your state out of my church.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, those actual words are not even in the Constitution.
No,
all it
not.
Says is Congress shall make no law concerning right. the establishment of religion. But when they start telling us what we're allowed to do and where we're allowed yeah. to pray and what kind of symbols we can put up, that is Congress making a law about the establishment of a religion.
That is one of the classic hypocrisies and misunderstandings and lies that's been sold to the American people. That whole concept, anti-disestablishmentarianism, isn't that the word?
Yes.
And that the separation of church and state, one, is part of the Constitution, and two, means that you can't have a prayer at a high school football game, or there's such a long list of ridiculous things. You know, we run a soup kitchen at our church where we feed people coming off the street, and
would they tell you you're not allowed to do that because it violates church and state?
Well, we used to get food from the San Antonio Food Bank, and it's a nonprofit organization, and you can buy food for pennies on the dollar, and we'd buy food. And at the briefing one year, I was there, and the lady said, well, you can't have any religious service if you're distributing this food. And I said, can you clarify? And she said, you can't have Bible study, prayer, or anything religious in order for people to receive your food. And I said, does that mean at a soup kitchen held on church property, I'm not allowed to say grace before the meal? And she said, absolutely not.
Well, you know, one of the fallacies of her thinking is that the Bible talks so much about feeding the poor, and I know this is a strong emphasis of your church, and I'm very proud of your church for doing this, but it probably never would have occurred to her to think that feeding of the poor is an act of religion, every bit as much an act of religion as prayer.
Oh, my gosh. It's in almost every book of the Old Testament.
And all over the New Testament, too.
Yeah, and it's absolutely part of what we're supposed to be doing. But in this particular, they said, no, you cannot even pray. And I said, I need to see a supervisor. And the supervisor backed it up and said, no, praying is a religious service, and you cannot do that if you're going to hand out food. And so we quit getting food from the food bank because I said, one, I'm not going to pretend like we're not praying and lie to these people to get their food. But two, I'm not going to live under that yoke. But they did. And this is a San Antonio thing. It's not a federal program. And something, but that thing has trickled down now. People are afraid to do anything that might sound Christian. Now, you can teach transcendental meditation in a state-funded school, and that's okay.
Oh, and there's all kinds of yeah. public elementary schools now that are letting the Muslim students have
yeah.
their time
yeah.
of prayer. And but boy, yeah. if Christians wanted to do that, the ACLU would be there so fast it would make your head spin.
Yeah. And by the way, go through, folks, and look at the foundation of, just take the Ivy League.
Oh, they were all Bible colleges.
They were all Bible colleges.
Harvard was a school for prophets when it was started.
We've fallen a long way, baby.
Remember when I first came out to San Antonio and met you and Gary? I was there because I was doing an atheist debate.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was at the airport, there was a fellow who had been at the debate, and we started chatting. And while we're waiting for our plane, he says, "You know, I don't really. To me, the issue is not whether God exists. My problem is Christians getting involved with politics." So I said, "Well, give me an example." And so, of course, he mentions abortion. I said, "Okay, so then." If we were to pick a different issue, and I knew the guy was a liberal, so I already knew what his answer would be. I said, so you would have had a problem when the Reverend Martin Luther King marched on Washington as a reverend, as
Thank
a
you.
Minister, in the name of Christianity,
Thank
preaching
you.
Against segregation. He says, no, I don't have any problem with that. I said, why not? He says, because that was a worthy cause. I said, okay, then this is not about church and state. This is just the fact that you don't like us talking about abortion, period.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, the Reverend Al Sharpton, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who, oh, man, can I tell a story?
Now, oh, remember, please.
The following views are not those necessarily of KCBQ.
There's no love lost on those two guys on this radio show.
Gary and I, you know, also were doing a sports show a couple of years ago, and the Final Four was here in San Antonio, so we went to it and had press credentials. So we're down there, and here's all these movie stars and athletes and celebrities, and I'm walking along, and lo and behold, there's the Reverend Jesse Jackson. And I'm going around, I'm shaking hands. I shook hands with Bill Russell, and I shook hands with Tim Robbins. I shook hands with all these people. They don't know who I am, but I'm shaking their hands. And Jesse comes by, I put my hand out, and he looks the other way and completely disses me. Just
You're kidding me. Now, did he know that you were a conservative?
Oh, there's more. No. He and folks, my family's listening right now, hopefully, and everybody that knows my family knows I am anything but a racist. But this is what I noticed. Jesse was walking along, and every black person sitting in the front row, African-American, sitting in the front row, he stopped and smiled and shook their hand.
But he wouldn't shake hands with the white people.
Yeah.
Now, why doesn't that surprise me? If a white person were doing that in reverse,
oh my gosh,
they'd be hell to pay.
And so next time around, I saw him, and I stepped in front of him physically, so he had to shake my hand, because I thought, bless God, Reverend, you're going to shake my hand.
Good for you.
And I'm, you know, I just thought, isn't that an interesting observation, Jesse? What about the rainbow? Where's the rest of the colors in the rainbow coalition?
Well, what about Martin Luther King's dream of a colorless society?
Well, you know, anyway.
Okay, hang with me over the friend of the break, my friend, and we will be right back. We're discussing the reputation that Christians have in the world today.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined by Jim Barrier, a pastor from San Antonio, Texas. Jim, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thanks. And say hi to George Runyon for me, will you?
Oh, that's right. You know George.
Yeah, he's a good man. I've lived in San Diego a long time.
He's done a really good job of uniting pastors.
I know that. And he has a tremendous network, and I have a number of friends that fellowship with him on a regular basis. And that's something the church should be known for.
The true spirit of an apostle, that's that man.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Jesus said, this is how people will know that you're my followers, something about loving one another, something like that.
And, we always get together as churches and organize according to our denomination. I love these interdenominational meetings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, oh, man. See, now you're just going to push all my buttons here.
Well, that's what we do here.
And on these things we've been talking about, I was in an interdenominational meeting here in San Antonio a while back, and they were talking about doing some certain projects and things, you know, to unite the city, and one of the people stood up and said, well, I think we know the difference between real Christians and false Christians. And I thought, here we go. And of course it was that real Christians are pro-life. And I just didn't say anything because, you know, I'm pro-life. But, now, and again, the following views do not reflect those of KCBQ. But I've had some interesting conversations with people about, yes, pro-life, because the unborn child is a child created in the image of God. Therefore, his life is sacred because he's created in the image of a sacred. But then when it comes to capital punishment, the same people are just absolutely rabid about that, and suddenly that human life is no longer sacred. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and I've gone back and forth with capital punishment. I understand.
You're a registered Democrat, Bob, aren't you?
I'm a registered Democrat, but I'm kind of like a Democrat with a mustache on.
And you're a Democrat in sheep.
Republican clothes. With a mustache on, I should say.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Well, but, you know, there was a time before I was a Christian, I was all for the death penalty. Then I went through kind of a pacifistic phase, and I was against it. And now, Jim, I think I'm somewhere in between. I think that if there's some murderer that's just smiling at the family and sees no remorse, I do think he should get what he deserved. But on the other hand, there are times, I remember, in fact, I think this was a woman in Texas. I don't remember her name. Mm-hmm. But she had done like 16 gruesome murders. But everybody around her, including the prison guards and fellow inmates and people visiting her, said that she had become born again and had just completely changed, was very penitent, and was willing to take responsibility for what she did, wasn't even appealing the case. They did execute her, and I have to say at that point, I wasn't sure what was served. So I don't think when it comes to capital punishment, it's a one-size-fits-all. On the other hand, I do see a difference between executing somebody who's guilty of murder and executing some innocent unborn life.
Yeah, and I think we are making some advances in forensics and stuff now that we can do DNA research. You know, there's a lot of people that have been pinned with capital murder that have been innocent, and some of them in recent months and years, they're going back and revisiting the thing. And that's my problem. What if the person is innocent? What if there's that outside chance that they're innocent and the case was not perfect? And I've sat on juries a few times, and they're never perfect. You know, and then really for me, the issue is this, and this gets down to one of those personal matters, but I have the Tony Campolo line, who we've had on our show, that he uses about being a conscientious objector, that he said, I can't imagine Jesus dropping the bomb or pulling the trigger, and I feel the same way. I can't imagine Jesus throwing the switch. In fact, he said, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. So those are the things that trouble me personally. I can't be the guy who throws the switch or activates the injection or whatever it is. Don't ask me to do that.
Yeah, and of course, you're going to have Christians, well-meaning Christians, loving Christians, that are going to have different views of that, because others are going to then say, well, but then if we're not willing to offer some kind of deterrent, then aren't we being unfair to the innocent people that this guy could go out and kill again? Well, and I think it's one of those things where Christians have to just...
Yeah, there are so many repeat offenders and people that get set free. Now, I am not, I don't lean quite as far over there as Ted Nugent, rock star... NRA member, you know, but if you've seen any of his interviews on the subject, but I think there's some reality as to what we can do to not put people back out on the street so that they can keep, you know, causing more harm and killing people or doing whatever things there are. There's a real, real problem in this city with child abuse and repeat offenders and those things. So I know there's some sanity, some reason in there, but I'm just saying life is sacred. Let's not have it both ways.
Now, where are you with the war on terror? Do you think it was appropriate for us to go into Afghanistan after 9/11?
Well, now I'm going to – here we go again, Bob, and you're the Democrat now, remember.
So we have a Democrat talking like a Republican and a Republican talking like a Democrat. Right?
That's what we've got going on here. And – you know, when we went in to Iraq, I made comments that were not received well, that I questioned why we were doing what we were doing, even though I know that Hillary and everybody else signed up for the deal because they all knew there was weapons of mass destruction. But I thought, you know, Bin Laden's probably not in Iraq. And so I was actually thinking that way back when. I think it's really funny, back to the political thing, I think it's funny that, you know, we just before your show, there was a little clip, and they were and it was, which one of those guys was it? One of those Democrats talking about Afghanistan and why we need to go in there, and the reason we need to be in there is so that we can weaken terrorism and they can't come and attack America like 9/11. And I'm thinking, doggone, these guys sound a lot like George W. Bush.
Oh, well, yeah, it's totally fine when a Democrat does it. War is only wrong when a Republican does it.
Yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
knows that.
And I had a conversation with a friend, actually it was his mom, and we got in this conversation. She's very, very liberal, and she said, well, all the Republicans have ever done is get us into war. And I said, you mean like World War II? Wait.
World War II, like Vietnam, Korea, Vietnam?
Not that one either. You know, and it's
been a Democratic administration almost every time we've been in a
yeah.
war.
But somehow people believe that stuff. They hear somebody say something, and then they believe it. And I think that's what this whole thing, trying to bring us back full circle here, is perception, is that people don't do their own research. People don't do their own thinking, by and large. People parrot what they've heard somebody else say. And I'd encourage people, and Christians especially, man, I tell my church all the time, don't go out of here and say, well, Pastor Jim says blah, 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 because that's what I say a lot. Do your homework. Do your own research. Find out. What does the Scripture say about an issue?
Absolutely.
What does history teach us? What, you know? And there's just a little bit too much of people taking the easy road and letting somebody else think for them.
That's right. Well, we won't do that here. We got one more segment coming up. Join us on The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my good friend Jim Barrier, and I hope you've noticed in our conversation that although Jim and I seem to agree on most things, we're not agreeing on absolutely everything. But one of the hallmarks of Christian maturity is that we agree on the cross. That's what's central. And sometimes well-meaning people have different ways of getting there. So having friendly discussions and disagreements would never threaten our very good friendship, and it ought not break up the fellowship in churches. Jim, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob. And the reality is, 41 years of this now, I've been a follower of Christ. And I'm using that terminology now because of what we're talking about. When I say Christian, immediately people put me in this box of things I don't want to be associated with.
Well, and the very fact that Christians can disagree with each other makes us very different from some religions. If a Muslim tried to critique Islam, they wouldn't be a Muslim very long. They wouldn't be alive very long.
Yeah, well, you got Shiites and you got the, who's the other guys?
The Shiites and the Sunnis and many
other. The Sunnis,
other
yeah, which is very, very similar to the Catholic Protestant thing, you know. But you're right, there should be cross-pollinization, there should be free thinking. You can read it, Paul had to address it. You know, people are saying, I'm a Apollos, I'm a Peter, I'm a Paul, and I'm a Mary.
And he said to them, I was determined when I was with you to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified.
That's the deal right there. That's the deal. And
so there's not a litmus test about whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a pacifist or not a pacifist.
No.
But that doesn't mean we can't have a good argument about it.
There needs, the cross of Christ must be central.
Now, in that vein of just a friendly discussion, you gave some examples of certain kinds of violence that you couldn't do or you don't think Jesus would do, such as dropping the bomb on Hiroshima, pulling the switch for an execution. Is there ever a case where you think war or violence may be appropriate? If it's not about land, if it's not about oil, are there some legitimate causes to you?
Well, for me as a Christian, I understand, one, that America is a superpower, and in order for America to stay a superpower, America's got to do what it's got to do, and they have to have a military, and they have to have all of that. I understand those things on a political, social level, but for me personally, and you know, when I was 18, we used to have a draft. Do you remember that?
Remember that. We were all scared to death of getting drafted.
Yeah, and I had to appear before the draft board.
Did you apply for a conscientious objectorship?
Well, I was a conscientious objector. And I sat before a panel of guys, and these guys are doctors and officers and who knows what, psychiatrists and everything. And they asked the proverbial question, well, now, if someone was holding a gun to your mother's head and you had the choice of either taking that person's life or watching him kill your mother, what would you do? And at the age of 18, you know, I was, you know, and it was the 60s, and I said, well, you know, that's a hypothetical scenario, which, if it's hypothetical, it's not reality. So since it's not reality, here's my answer. I would whistle, call for my flying elephant who would swoop down from the sky and scurry my mother and I off to safety. You're not talking reality. You're talking hypotheses. And so I've never bought into those kind of things. What would you do if? I don't know. I would hope God would give me grace to do what is morally right and humanly wise. And beyond that, I can't answer those things. I would hope I would have the courage and the grace of God to do what in my deepest heart of hearts I know is the right thing to do at that moment. On a national level, on a worldwide level, there have always been wars. There will be wars until the end of time, wars and rumors of wars. And I realize that's part of the human condition.
Well, not only wars, but we certainly have a need for policemen in our society as
Absolutely.
Well.
And, you know, Paul said to pray for the king, you know, and submit to the authorities. I understand all of that. But I also know there's a certain point where you cross the line and you say, you decide whether it is right for me to obey God or men. And I said to that panel, if going to prison will prove to you that I believe what I say I believe, then so be it.
So now, would you
have to live by your conviction?
But you wouldn't tell a Christian who wanted to be a police officer or join the military, for example, that they were sinning. You would just say, this is something that personally I don't feel led to do.
Exactly. My son-in-law is in the United States Marine Corps stationed at Miramar in San Diego, Semper Fi.
And you don't condemn him for that?
I honor him. I pray for him. I'm so proud of him for serving his country. I said it this morning. Anytime a young man or woman puts on a uniform to put their life in harm's way for the sake of others, they deserve our honor and our prayers, and I have the highest regard for those people. And I have met and talked with policemen in our city of San Antonio, and I tell them we pray for you guys all the time. We appreciate what you do, and I understand the job they have to do, but I'm saying for me, I can't cross that line. I think if I were to do it all over again, what I would have done is probably gone in the military and been a chaplain.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a little too old now. They won't take me. But, you know, I would volunteer or do something on that level. I think there are ways you can serve the country if you have a conscientious position like mine. I have a good friend who may be listening. He's probably watching the Chargers close out this game against the Raiders.
And Isn't it great having a radio show that's always on against the Chargers?
I meant to prophesy at the start of the show. Don't bother watching TV. The Chargers will beat the Raiders. They always do. and so that will come to pass. And that's mainly the game, passing. So my friend there, whose name I won't mention to protect him, but he was in the military, and at a certain point he was put on guard duty, and they gave him a gun, and he ran through the thing, and he thought, you know, you're asking me that in a certain situation I may have to shoot one of my fellow, you know, men here. And he went to his CO and he said, I can't do that. And they put him on non-com service the rest of his time. And I honored him for taking that stand and saying, you know what, really facing the situation, I don't think I can do that, especially if you're asking me to take another American's life, you know, which is what an MP or shore patrol or whoever it is would may have to do if push came to shove. And so he made that call, and the rest of his time he didn't carry a gun, and he still served his country. God bless him.
Now, Jim, moving a little bit off of the situation with war, I know that you are Republican in other ways. There's a great concern these days about the socialist tendencies of the Democratic Party. I have many Democrat, not like me, just Democrat in name, but I have many friends who are Democrats just passionately. And they would turn to something like the Book of Acts, where it says all the early in the book where all the believers had everything in common. They sold what they had. And they would kind of use that as a justification for this mandatory redistribution of wealth. Would you be going there, or would you draw a distinction between the voluntary redistribution of wealth in the church, which was a good thing, and mandatory redistribution of wealth that's done through the government?
Well, they need to read the whole book, because that didn't last too long.
Especially when Ananias and Sapphira came along.
Well, and that's what I say to people that want a New Testament church. Why don't you come and we'll take an offering the way they did with Ananias and Sapphira, and we'll see how that works out. No, I do not buy that, because I think it's taking things, one, out of context, and two, it's forgetting what you've said, and we've said, repeat on the show, the cross of Christ is central. Everything those people did was to further the cause of Christ. And I'll tell you what, if the Democrats, by the way, let's not use the word, they are socialists. It's not tendencies. What's going on right now is just way, 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 way over the line. So if the Democrats, Republicans, or anybody in government wants to say, yeah, we're going to take all this money and we're going to use it to spread the gospel of Christ, then I'll sign up for
that. We are out of time, my friend. The time went by far too quickly. We'll have you on again really soon.
All right, Bob. Love you.
Okay, love you too, my friend. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.